Our speaker this morning is the Reverend Jennifer Dalton. Oh, I forgot about that. Oh, sorry. We're going to sing the youth out. Okay. Go now in peace.
Go now in peace. Go now in peace. May the love of God surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go.
Well, so apparently some people also, we do have a good Baptist or Methodist or whatever. Okay. Reverend Dalton was born and raised in the mountains of Virginia. Spiritually, she was raised Mormon and Southern Baptist. She spent 4 years as an aircraft technician in the U.S. Air Force before completing her bachelor's degree in political science. And many years later, her master's in divinity degree from Emory's Chandler School of Theology. She is currently ordained and recognized by the Alliance of Baptists and considers herself a Unitarian Universalist Baptist. So do I. Okay. She has been married for 18 years and is raising three children, ages, is it still 22, 18, and 16?
Still 22, 18, and 16.
They all live with three dogs, three cats, and Jennifer is currently working at the Atlanta Medical Center as a patient advocate. Her sermon this morning is "The Only Thing We Have to Fear." And I stole your picture from Facebook.
I figured you'd probably like it since it was on your page.
Okay, see. I'm going to take a little drink of water so I'm not coughing on y'all this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Like a lot of my sermons do, this one started on a mountain back in Virginia. When I was about 6 years old, I almost drowned. Mostly because I went down the big slide into 6 feet of water, even though I couldn't swim very well. By the time I was seven, I had regular fights with the boys down the road. And we lived giving each other and receiving bruises as badges of honor. I climbed trees and rode the biggest roller coasters, even though I was afraid of heights and speed. When our parents went to the drive-in for the triple feature horror show, I was the only kid who stayed outside in the dark on the ground through all three shows. I had nightmares for months, but I did it. My parents used to tell people I was fearless, and my mama was especially proud of how tough I was. But the truth was, I wasn't tough. I was terrified. I was an anxious kid and scared to death of new people, the dark, heights, bugs, all sorts of things. I read books constantly and I loved mystery and horror, so it seemed my little brain had no problem coming up with new things to be afraid of. And it never ever went away, not fully. Even as a teenager, I read about serial killers and became terrified to walk from my job to my car at night. I was afraid of random diseases wiping out the population because I read The Stand by Stephen King. I was terrified of becoming pregnant even when I was still a virgin because I read about it and it did happen that one time. True story, I was so scared. But there were worse things than being afraid. Like someone finding out you were afraid. The reason I got on that water slide at six was because my mama called me chicken. I fought the boys in my neighborhood, partially because my stepbrother called me chicken. The horror show? I was more afraid of my parents thinking I was a chicken than anything Jason or Freddy Krueger could dish out. And the military didn't change it. If anything, it reinforced it. I cannot tell you to this day how deathly afraid of heights that I am. But I rappelled off a 150-foot cliff when I was 22 because my other option was admitting to my buddies that I was chicken. Most of the stupid things I've done in my life did not start with "hold my beer." They actually started with, "Hey y'all, I ain't scared. Watch this." From the time I could toddle, it was only okay to be afraid of two things: your mama and daddy and God's wrath. Beyond that, you were expected to show no fear. And even a few years ago, I would have told you I was raised by the toughest, most fearless people I know. But in the last few years, I figured something out. My family back on that mountain, they're afraid. Hell, they're afraid of everything. They're afraid the government will take their guns. They buy more guns to protect their guns because they are afraid that strangers are going to break into the trailer to steal the guns. They're afraid that Muslims are going to bomb Gretna by God, Virginia. They are afraid that Mexicans will take their jobs. They are afraid that African Americans are taking their tax dollars. They're afraid that homosexuals will take their marriage, and transgender people are going to attack them in the bathroom. They are afraid that liberals will steal their Jesus. They're afraid. They're afraid of people who look different, people who sound different, people who worship different, and people that love different. And the media fills the story, feeds the fear with story after story: kidnappings, murder, bombings. Bad news sells, and the truth is, we, all of us, the people, are buying. And if you spend the day, as my daddy does, sitting in a recliner with a steady diet of Fox News, I promise you that you too would be afraid. Hell, truth is, global warming, policemen killing young black men, women raped and murdered, the political situations in the Middle East, homophobia, transphobia, the political situation almost everywhere, nuclear bombs and immigrant children locked in cages. And if I take a second to think of all of it, I'm afraid. Because the world can be a scary place. And fear is a basic human emotion. The fear that we feel is an emotional response that's induced by a perceived threat. It causes a change immediately in our brain and organ function, as well as in our behavior. Now, if you think about it, if you go back to when we were hunter-gatherers, many of the things that people are afraid of, common fears, snakes, spiders, heights, can kill you. Back when our ancestors huddled by the fires at night, there were many things in the dark that would be more than happy to make you dinner. We are animals, and fear is a basic instinct that's kept us alive for hundreds of thousands of years. The fight or flight response was built in to send us into action faster than the speed of rational thought. Because fear causes our bodies to move into action, our heart rate and our blood pressure increase, our pupils dilate to take in as much light as possible, our veins constrict in preparation to send more blood to major muscle groups, blood sugar rises, some muscles tense, others relax so we can get more oxygen in our lungs. All of our non-essential systems shut down to allow for emergencies, and we cease being able to think. We have trouble focusing on small tasks because our brain is directed by our body to focus only on that big picture and be able to see any coming threats. Or in the words of Frank Herbert, fear is the mind killer. And it doesn't need to be as extreme as the examples that I offered from the mountain earlier. It can be a lot more subtle. A fear of rejection that keeps us from embracing new people. A fear of failure that keeps us from sharing our gifts and our talents in the world. A fear of death that prevents us from embracing life. Fears are not just loud and boisterous. Fears can be quiet murmurs in the corners of our psyches that keep us from fully living. In his book, Fear, Getting Through the Storm, Thich Nhat Hanh writes, "For many of us, even when we are most joyful, there is fear behind our joy. We fear that this moment will end, that we won't get what we need, that we will lose what we love, or that we will not be safe. Often our biggest fear is the knowledge that one day our bodies will cease functioning. So even when we are surrounded by all of the conditions for happiness, our joy is not complete. I was taught to push my fears downward and just move past them. Ignore it, move forward. And I am certain that many of us in this room were taught the same thing. We were afraid of the monster under the bed, and our parents told us, there is no monster, turn off the lights, go to sleep. And so we learned to push the fear down, ignore it, deny it, move forward. And it's not an unuseful skill. But just because we pretend we're not afraid doesn't mean the fear isn't still there. The fear is still there. We grow older and the monster is still there. The monster just grew up with us, and suddenly the monster is fear of aging, fear of words like cancer, financial insecurity, fear that someone will break into our homes or cars and take the things we need to be happy, fear that we will lose our loved ones, fear that we too will cease to exist. In other words, we ignored the monster under the bed, and it just grew to be 7 foot tall with bigger claws and longer fangs. As long as the monster is under the bed, we are controlled in 1,000 different ways by our fears. Our bodies move forward and parts of our brains shut down a bit. And the truth is, we cannot be our best selves living in a constant state of fight, flight, or freeze. We deny the fear and it manifests as covetousness, jealousy, anger. It takes on a self-righteous tone as we seek to control or destroy the object of our fear. We lose the root of fear and we lash out at the world around us. Now, many of our ancestors practiced magic, and they believed in demons, evil spirits. Some of us still do. But one of the common beliefs that went across culture with magic practitioners was that to have power over something, you had to be able to name it. Naming, the naming of a child, naming of an animal, and yes, the naming of a demon was a very powerful thing. Because once you knew its name, you had control over the entity. The most common of these is the grim fairy tale Rumpelstiltskin, in which the only way the heroine can escape her deal and save her child is to learn the name of the entity she made the deal with. Again, from Thich Nhat Hanh, the only way to ease our fear and be truly happy is to acknowledge our fear. Look deeply at its source. Instead of trying to escape from our fear, we can invite it up into our awareness, look at it clearly and deeply. He recommends that we spend time with our fears, that we sit quietly and bring them out, that we look at them, that we examine their root. I would say that we name them. We get to know them. Because as he also says, we fear being powerless, but all of us have the power to look at our fears and not allow them to control us. Recently, I became jealous of one of my husband's friends. Now, I'm not normally jealous. Well, the truth is, first I reacted. I was going to make myself look a little bit better. Before I spent some time in meditation. I reacted poorly. And then I spent some time in meditation, truly looking at the source of my jealousy. I realized I wasn't afraid of his relationship with another male or female. I was afraid of losing him. And then when I went deeper, I recognized that I see him as essential to my happiness. So that the fear wasn't the fear of a situation, but the fear of losing someone, losing something that is essential in my mind to my happiness. My fear was a monster rooted in some future event, some loss that had not even happened. I was afraid because I had jumped 5 years in the future, experienced a loss I hadn't experienced, and my jealousy was shutting my brain down and telling my body that there was a real threat in the midst. So one of the main factors when I became afraid was that I ceased to live in the present moment. And in many cases, the fears we face every day are fears that are based either in the past or in the future. We are afraid now because we have had bad experiences in our past, and we continue to choose to relive them. We are afraid now for the bad thing that's coming in the future. We are afraid, and we are not living in the present moment that we're given. Thich Nhat Hanh says that most of us in our daily lives are lost in fears and anxieties. We seek to escape the present moment. We read a book, watch television, surf the internet, and we escape them. But as soon as we stop, our fears, our worries, our anxieties return with us. We are rarely in the moment with some sense of inner peace. He goes further. The present moment is where we need to operate. When you are truly anchored in the present moment, you can plan for the future in a much better way. Living mindfully in the present does not preclude making plans. It only means that you know there's no use in losing yourself in worries and fear concerning the future. If you are grounded in the present moment, you can bring the future into the present to have a deep look without losing yourself in anxiety and uncertainty. If you are truly present and know how to take care of the present moment as best you can, you are doing the best for the future already. I was looking at the UU traditions, and I noticed that two of the sources, one-third of the sources, mention love. One says the words and deeds of prophetic people, which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. The other states we draw from Jewish and Christian teachings, which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves. I brought those to light because in my mind, fear is the opposite of love. Living in fear, living in the past, living in the future, it keeps us from being the loving people that we seek to emulate in our spiritual lives. Fear keeps us from fully loving ourselves, and it builds walls, not bridges. Fear doesn't call us to our best selves. Only love can do that. Mindfulness meditation is a way to call us back to the present. It's a few moments practicing deep breaths, focusing on breathing in and out. But these are moments that we can take to remember when, where, and most importantly, who we are. It's simple, but it can be that moment to bring us back to our best selves. And we each deserve to experience our best self. The world outside those doors is hungry for our best selves. Islamophobia, homophobia, xenophobia, transphobia. The world is filled with fear. And I know in my heart that more fear is not what it needs. The world we live in hungers for compassion, for justice, and for love. And I ask today that each of us strive to bring it that love that it desperately needs, that we face our fears, and that we bring the love that lights us from within and sheds that light on the darkest corners around us. Amen, shalom, and blessed be.
We've traditionally heard that the opposite of love is apathy or ambivalence. It was a helpful insight that, you know, for you to say that the opposite of love is fear. Yes. Interesting. Helpful. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
So I appreciate your comments. It struck home for me. About 15 years ago, I had need to see a therapist, and I did. And she said, "What are you afraid of?" I said, "Well, I'm afraid of being a failure, and I'm afraid of being a success. I'm afraid of people not liking me, and then I'm afraid of people loving me." And we went through a list, you know?
Yeah.
And then she said, you're afraid of a lot of things. I said, yeah. I said, it's like, maybe my biggest problem is the only thing I have fear is fear itself. And then it made sense what Franklin Delano Roosevelt told the American public in the depths of the Depression, that fear itself is something that can be controlled with logic. And I hadn't thought that emotions can be controlled with logic. Emotions can't get rid of it, but but logic can tell you how to deal with fear. And for that, I'm very grateful. And I'm okay now. I'm not afraid of too many things.
I'm interested in your autobiography, your story about your family in the mountain in Virginia. How do you not confront, but how do you interact with that family in their fear, and how do they respond to you? Because we're dealing with that every single day. I have a lot of friends out in California and thereabouts who kind of live in a bubble, and they can't believe that I have neighbors that fly Confederate flags. And I say, well, they're my neighbor, and we have meals together, and they're like, how can you do that? And I was like, well, we just do it. But, you know, we avoid a lot of conversation too. So how do you deal with it in family?
It truly depends on which family member. If it's my daddy or my uncles, the gloves are off and we're on. We'll fight, we'll argue, we'll, until one or the other of us can't take it, we'll walk away. And it's actually how I've learned what they're afraid of. When Obama was elected, my dad actually looked at me in the middle of one of these fights. He goes, no, wait a minute, seriously. Because we can get a little brash. And I said, yeah, Daddy. And he's like, aren't you a little scared that he ain't going to do anything for white people? He's just going to look after his own. And I'm like, well, I guess then African Americans should have been worried for the other 40-some presidents. But we can work it through. I have relatives that we don't discuss these things ever. I have some that we can have a loving conversation, and I have some that I'm the crazy liberal that moved off to Atlanta, and we do the best we can. And I think that relationship, when we have these conversations, the relationship that you have in place with the person makes a big difference in how deeply you can go and how the conversation itself can go. Yes, ma'am.
I just had a quick comment.
Yes.
An LJ and a few of my friends know what happened to me, but I was on in a car. Felt like I was kidnapped with my father on the way to Atlanta to help him go to Seattle for his sister's 70th anniversary. And on the way there, he went off on me on the entire way there because I do not support what's happening in our government right now. And because I couldn't keep quiet. So I fought back. Usually I just say, we agree to disagree, we won't talk about it. But in the end, I said, how could you support somebody that does this and does this that I've listed? And he said, because I was afraid the other side would take away his guns. And I was just floored because it just seemed sad to me that you know, that he would do that. And anyway, I should have.
Well, I have to be honest. I can't look at someone who is not a supporter of gay rights or transgender rights and say, I'll agree to disagree. And I can't do it because my daughter is gay. And because my youngest daughter came out as transgender. And I have very real fears about their safety. They hang out in a place called Kennesaw, and I don't know if y'all know about Kennesaw, but they've been yelled at from pickup trucks, so I know that they're not entirely safe. But I can see where my fear for their safety means that I'm not the best person to be having a conversation that needs to be had, because I'm so fearful on my side that I just come out as mama bear with teeth and claws. And so I can see how fear can go on either side and how it interferes with conversation, regardless of where we're at.
Yes.
Some fears are rational. Some threats are real. And the teeth and claws are appropriate in response to those real threats.
I
didn't do it. You're not paranoid if they really are after you.
Turn the volume up. I'm sorry. You're too close to speak.
In response to what you were saying about the love and the opposite of love, and, you know, that's always been my belief, that the opposite of love is apathy. And what I would propose is that the fear is maybe more of a devourer of love. Fear negates the love or chases it away, causes it to go and hide. Something of that nature.
Well, I collect disorders. I have you probably know I have OCD.
What am I trying to say? Obsessive compulsive disorder. But I used to have anxiety disorder so bad there was no way I could step up right. And my little jump start on the doxology would have just had me curled up in the floor before. But I do agree that it is actually, I don't really believe in opposites. I really don't believe there's such things as fear. Fear is really just the absence of love in my belief system. So it's sort of like, I believe it was Einstein who said, you think that, you know, this darkness is real. No, it's not. There is no such thing as darkness. There's only light. And it's the absence of darkness, the absence of light that makes you believe in darkness. So there's no such thing as hate or fear, but only love, the absence of love, makes those things real. So for me, when I started practicing joy, I suddenly could stand in front of people and misstep and laugh it off. Anyone else?
I think that's a sermon if you haven't preached it, but the day I started practicing joy...
I actually did.
Oh, good.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.